print it. And sometimes they will print your letter. And sometimes they will actually adhere to what it is that you're saying to them. And if they get enough of them, they have no choice except to respond. And that's something that each one of us can do individually, even if we're not organized collectively to do it. And of course, doing it collectively carries more weight and is far more effective. So thank you so very much. Then we come to one that I just love. And that's this whole business of civic and political participation. Because I maintain that in order to be a citizen, you must participate. And that if you're not participating, then you're abdicating your citizenship responsibility. And that one of the responsibilities of living in a free and democratic society is to be involved.
That's right.
And if you're not, then you're just giving up your rights. So civic and political participation.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Justin Sanders. In my day job, I'm a lawyer. And it seems like I spend the rest of my time working on behalf of the Los Angeles Urban League Young Professionals. And on behalf of myself and my organization, I'd like to thank our U.S. Congresspeople, Congressman Davis, Congresswoman Milner McDonald, and Congresswoman Watson. Thank you for putting on this important program. You know, one of the things that my friends and I always talk about is empowering young black men and how can we get our men more involved in the political process. And, you know, we sit around the couch or we sit around watching football while we're talking about it, but I'm glad to do this today with people that are engaged in the political process and that know how to do these things. So with that, I'll speak on what we talked about. We had about 25 people on our panel, and we asked basically three questions. The first question was, why are so few black men engaged in the political process? And we found that most of the answers tied in to a sense of black men, inside black men, of individualism. I don't know if it's a male-female thing, but men tend to be more individualistic, especially black men. And we had some young people in our group, and we questioned them. We wanted to know, why don't you care about politics? And they said they just didn't understand. They didn't see how it pertained to them. And so one of the things that we felt was important to focus on was making politics important to the individual. And that's not just something that happens every 4 years on a presidential election. We had a lot of good suggestions that, hey, you know, if they're talking about raising bus pass fees, we need to be out there informing people that, hey, it's going to affect you because it's going to make the cost of your bus pass double. So we need you to get out and vote, or we need you to attend this city council meeting or this MTA board meeting. So it was really a focus on individuals. Second, we found that most people felt that black men just aren't getting information. And this ties into a lot of, maybe in the media panel as well, they're just not hearing about things. People aren't, you know, we're not engaging them on television. We're not engaging them in the newspapers. We don't have strong black newspapers that talk about politics on a consistent basis on a level that most black men can understand. And next, many people had the feeling that politics was kind of out of touch to them, and that politicians in particular were a little out of their reach, and people expressed the need for more mentorship. And I think you know, that's extremely important when you're talking about black men. And lastly, especially with the younger people that were in our session, it's very difficult for someone like me to understand, probably many of you, they don't get the whole civil rights thing, which I found odd, but they just simply did not live it. Neither did I. I'm only 29. But I was still born, you know, only, you know, 6 or 7 years after Dr. King was assassinated, but they just don't get it. It doesn't pertain to them. You know, I was watching Barack Obama speak the other day on TV One, great new TV channel, if anybody has watched it. And he said, you know, we're 20 years into this thing now, and the message has to be shaped to people so that they can look at it in that frame of reference. And that was an important topic of discussion in our group. The second question we asked was the importance, how important is voting and what can we do to get more black men voting? And one of the focuses was not that we shouldn't just focus on the presidential election. You know, we had great turnout, even though it might not have gone so well, we had great turnout in November 2004. But now the challenge is to stay on top of it. You know, all those people that were organized, that are on those email lists, they need to be out there, you know, down in the city halls and the courts, doing their thing, lobbying, staying engaged. Don't just let them go and wait till 2008. That's far too long. Focus on local issues. You know, as a homeowner, I find almost sometimes that my relationship with my city councilman is more important than who's president of the United States.
Yeah.
You know, because, hey, you know, if the dogs are running in the streets and, you know, I mean, there's potholes everywhere, you know, that affects me on a daily basis. And that is a way to make things relevant to young black men, especially, to take control of their block. If you can't, you might not be able to take control of the country, you might not be able to be president of the United States, but you can be the boss on your block. And I think that's what a lot of men, they want to feel empowered. You know, I think men in general, we have a tendency and a need to want to be empowered, you know, and it can lead us down crazy paths sometimes, but it can also be a power that's harnessed and used effectively. And lastly, on voting, we talked about the importance of educating black men about where they have come from, what they have gone through to get to where they are now. And it's something that you don't have to beat over the head to younger black men, but they have to understand that we did not always have this right to vote that we are now taking for granted. The last thing we asked was, how can the church be more effective in bringing more black males into the political arena, and how can the church be more effective in general? And what we found was that there are a lot of comments that we need our political leadership to be in the church on a more consistent basis when there's not an election. And I think that's important because our political leadership is very well, you know, is looked up to. When I was a kid, if Tom Bradley walked into a room I was in, it was an experience, and I always remember looking at him as somebody I admired and somebody that I wanted to, you know, if I could just be half the man he was, then I'd be okay. So I think, you know, people want to see our leadership. And one of the things that we noted was that while most of our churches are led by males, the membership tends to be led by females. And we had a gentleman from a church say that he works with pastors that work on preaching a more male-oriented message. And that's not to sidetrack from females, but it's more to say that, hey, men, if you want to be engaged, you have to take a leadership position in your family, as the head of your family, as a man, and that, you know, will lead them more into the political process. And we also talked about churches establishing standing public policy committees. We said, hey, well, you know, if you need to find several hundred black people, you go to a church. You know, we have a ready-made institution right there that has hundreds of people. and we need to use that. Churches need to establish public policy committees, maybe a male public policy leadership committee, that will attend city council meetings and that will do those things. And it all ties back into this this need among males for pride. And if men engage in these things, I think they'll sustain themselves and they'll have a great outcome. So that's what we had. We have our big poster board here on the floor. I'll turn that in happily. And once again, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Justin. Excellent, excellent points. You know, I was sitting there thinking, I use the Bible to train precinct workers, especially when they go out and knock on the door and people don't want to hear what they're telling them. I said, do like the Lord told his disciples. Jesus told his disciples, and I don't sit all day here. He said, they don't want to hear what you got to say, shake the blood out of your feet. In Chicago, we just tell them a little different. We tell them, say, let the doorknob hit you where the good Lord split you. And keep on moving. Don't be wasting a whole lot of time. But that's what Jesus told his disciples when he was telling them, you know, that if people don't want to hear about Christianity, don't waste all the time in this house. Go on to the next house. A good salesman learns to do that. If a cat's selling door to door, he can size up in a few minutes whether or not he got a real customer. If he ain't got no customer, no client here, he gone. Because he got to make a sale. He ain't going to stand there and argue with you the rest of the day and be broke. He got to make a sale. Criminal justice system is our reporter, Dr. Scott.
How y'all? Oh my Lord, 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 Lord. I do that to get your attention.
Got it.
I've been asked to summarize all this, but the Lord gave me the spirit move, mass media, entertainment, civic and political participation. Before I go there, I want to thank the Congresswoman Malone, McDonald and Watson. Why is it behind every major thing is a strong African-American woman? Thank you. Dan Davis stimulated me to get involved with this movement. I'm the West Coast representative for the year 2005 for the African-American male. Get a little spiel in there. This is a CD that Dr. Richard Williams from Rochester, New York shared with me when I was back there on a two-year tour. I come off of a two-year tour of about 40 cities, looking at people who look like you and me, in the churches, in the political system, in out on the street, Washington, D.C., that really pained me there. I'm talking about African-American males, and we need to get our act together. I sat on that street, and I'll get to the summary. Just bear with me. I'll land the plane soon. I don't have a lot to say. In Washington, D.C., the same street that Howard University is on, I was in my van out there and came up to my window. Several men looked like me soliciting for sexual favors. And I just noted all that, and the next day, an article came out in the Washington Post. The person said they rode with the police down that street, and then on that, they arrested 100 people. Of the 100, 98 of them were black. And of the 98, 95 were African-American males. I'm talking about, we need to get our act together. They don't even know who they are. Many of our young people, many of our don't know who they are. But anyway, on the economic empowerment, family, faith, parenting, education, and health, you know, all that is wonderful. But what good is it if you get stopped like I do all the time? Now see, I interact between Riverside and Orange County and all that. And I'm stopped as of within the past few days.
No one asked your name or nothing. Are you on probation? Are you on probation?
Do you have a felony? 1,000 times no. That's a catch 22.
Yeah.
Just because I'm black, you asking me a question, am I on probation? Do you ever even told me what you stopped me for? Do you have a felony? If I say, yes, I am on probation, then I'm out of here, right? Why are you out here? And if I say no, then I'm going to give you one. That is a very mighty problem we're dealing with, worse than the black codes back so many years ago. So the criminal justice system is more important to you, your freedom, than all these others to some extent. Because if you're incarcerated, if you're taken and put into this fearful police state, then how do you function? You see, I, on my study of 2 years in all these cities, I concluded three things: that we as a people, we're mighty. We are mentally strong, we're physically strong, and we're spiritually strong. But we need to access the spirit more, because if we don't, we're out of here. And again, thank you for putting this together. Damn, again, I've been following you for 2 years. See, Dr. Williams, he has this Torches on the Road to Passion, a guide for young black males. It's a CD. We're trying to put this in the hands of at least 1 million black males across 10 major cities. And if y'all want to help me do this, please come forward. I'll be 2 months behind time. Dr. Williams also wrote this book, Torches on the Road of Passage, a guide for black males. And then he also wrote a book, here's his first book, They Stole It, But You Must Return It. So I didn't necessarily come up here, but this is solutions. Now let's talk about solutions. I would like to give some time to Zane. Got 2 minutes, Zane. This is a solution to the criminal justice gang problem. Come on, Zane. 2 minutes. Is that all right?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Beautiful, brother.
How's everybody doing?
All right. Good.
You guys, I'm not a great speaker like most of these people out there. But I do want to share with you guys, and I'm not really proud of this, you guys. As a matter of fact, I'm very, very ashamed of what this thing has turned into. But I'm one of three who formed the original Crips. And in the beginning, the original Bloods were Crips. You guys, I came from a broken home as a kid, growing up in Watson, Compton. And the thing is, a lot of things happened, and the whole situation is a real long story. But I do want you guys to know this, that broken homes destroys children. I wanted to be a doctor when I was young. I see myself wanting to assist God with life into the world. But my father left my mother, a Filipino woman, who had 6 children. And me being the oldest, I couldn't understand why he left. But my father wasn't very well educated, and he was having problems on jobs. So these things really tore at him and made him walk away from my mother. But the thing is, I didn't understand that back then. Being the oldest, I was wondering, why did he leave? And when I go in the icebox, you guys, I saw myself looking in this icebox, and all I seen was a pot of beans. And 2 days later, this pot of beans started drying up around the edges. So I found myself, I always had a personal relationship with God. But at the time, I found myself starting to look at my possibilities. What can I do to help my mother? Being the oldest of these 6 kids. And you know, I found myself doing some things, you guys, I wasn't proud of doing. So, I did some street stuff. Start stealing cars, tapes. I started making money so I could put food in the house. But when my mother found out that I was doing these things, she said I didn't want your money. And it caused me, and I didn't want to hear what she had to say.
Okay,
but the solution is, hold on, but the solution is, I'm getting there. The solution, you guys, is the fact that once we wound up, that situation there caused me to start organizing the Baby Black Panthers. And that's what I did first, because I grew up in during the 60s. I watched police officers calling us niggas and jumping on people, my fathers and grandfathers. So I was a little militant. But then after that, I was introduced to Raymond and the Baby Avenues by a brother named Samuel Simmons. And us three, we started the Crips, forming Crips, and that's another story. But the original guys in the beginning, and you guys, the original Bloods that formed the Blood Alliance throughout the whole city, that combated against the Crips, you guys, were personal friends. And I never would come forward with this information before, you guys, because I've watched Elder Cleveland get ran in exile. I knew what that was all about. I knew who was who out here in America, And I knew I wasn't getting ready to come forward and acknowledge some dumb stuff that happened backfired on our own culture and started destroying our own children. And I'm gonna tell you guys, I apologize for my situation today. But here I am today, you guys in high school, looking like Angela Davis by the head, this big old natural. But then on the next page, on the next page, you guys, they have a brother named Lorenzo Benton, who they now call Dadisi, who started the Blood Alliance in prison. Dadisi now is a shot caller in the pen. He's been locked up for over 30-something years. And Dadisi, actually, you guys, is a very good friend of mine. See, we can stop this black-on-black killing, but I was afraid to come forward with this. Like, I was wondering, what can we do? Because I helped take this top off, and I was wondering, what can I do to help put this top back on? So you guys, we're trying to document this situation right now. And I'm going to go into the prisons with cameras, talk to the brothers, because I know who the shot callers are. And we need to start in the prison to wake our kids up from the black-on-black killing. Once we wake our kids up and they realize who they are as African people, then once they learn the history and understand more about how we got here, and that history wakes them up, then brothers can start forming an alliance amongst ourselves and start standing up for civil rights, such as school books in our community. Why is the lotto not really paying for our children's education out here? And start standing up and facing these political issues. Why is the media not covering the situation in Somalia? Why is the media not covering the situation in the Haitian Islands? All these things that we're really being blind to because the media is controlling, you know, a lot of what we don't see. So, you guys, I'm here to give that solution, but we're trying to do this documentary and take it on national television. Because I can save one kid here today, but if he goes outside and his neighbor and his partner over here, they start getting shot at by the guys in the next block, he's right back in the car with the homie, trying to duck and get out the way. But grabbing a pistol at the same time, trying to protect himself. But that's not going to work. So we have to take this on national TV, the true history. True history is the only thing that's going to set them free. And we can't just do this in California. We got to take this across the country, over and abroad, because I got partners that took the Crips into Europe. This was the early 70s when they went into the military. So you guys, it's bigger than what we think. And this is a curse that has come down on African children. So you guys, pray for us, and we're looking forward to solving this problem.
I need to qualify myself some more. I don't like to do this. But Dr. Scott, I founded the Black Foundation in 1993 when 5,000 structures were damaged. And I came in because I knew my community would need some glue. And the foundation, we're responsible for bringing thousands of jobs into this community. If you know where the Bonds Market is in Inglewood, we performed that marriage. We told Bonds Corporation, and we told, we had a little small black contractor, RLB, and we told them that you won't build this store without using African-American contractors. And we married them together. We found out that RLB couldn't put up the $100,000 to bid on that $15 million. I learned something that I learned back at Irvine. I'm the first black to graduate from University of California, Irvine, biological science. I don't like to tell people that, but I need to let people know, you know, that I've been there. And I struggled, and God is good. Now, getting on to the issue here, we were able to put together the bid, which in Woody Construction, yeah, they're the ones who built the Petty Museum. We took Steve Smith, and he put up the $100,000. And we put RLB in there, and he hired over 150 black men and women to look like you and me. And they took that plan right off the architectural drawings. I'm talking about that Hillcrest, that Bonds Market there. They took it right off the architectural drawings, and 150 black men and women built that store from the ground up. And some of our best block layers were women. And that's done over in Amoroso Construction with Cecil Murray's Fame Manor, Fame Garden, Job Guidance Center, and then other people got involved in building these shopping centers and so forth. So I just want to say that standing up and getting thousands of jobs for people to look like you and me was what the foundation is about. And we're still here. Nothing but the power of the living God. And we are ready right now, across the street. You got Morley Construction putting up amazing structure. And I just looked up, it didn't have no black involved. You see? So watch it, because it's coming back. And we're ready to attack it. And we're planning training right now. We're in the projects area, and we're training young men and women to come in, because when we hit them in their belly, boom,
they're going to give it up. And when they give it up, I don't want to be
standing here without us not trained to do it. You see? So we're training black men and women now to go on some projects right here in Los Angeles. I'm telling you, take it on media, get ready, because we're going to get our black people involved. It's about jobs. I had a wife for 35 years. She passed 6 years ago, 3 beautiful children. So I think I'm qualified to talk about the African-American man with a family.
Come on, man.
She stood behind me and I stood behind her. And I'm going to end my comments and bring on this brother here who have a solution. My solution is this. 1973, I was asked to head up the Watts Neighborhood Youth Center on 103rd and Wilmington. They were tearing the building down. And Dr. Cannon asked me to go and he said, "You're a strong brother, man, you know." I went over there and for 2 weeks, the windows were being torn out, scribbling all over the wall, walked over the rooms and marijuana and everything. And then a young man showed up named Harold Tyishka, one of the founders of the Crips and the Pyrus. And I'm talking about the solution is LOVD and compassion. Because I didn't look at this brother as the head of a 15 who controlled thousands of members, gang members in South Central. I said, "Brother, come on into this building." Gave him stationery, gave him office space, and so forth, and worked with him. If you understand KCET, you look back in the annuals of the station KCET, some of the first programming under Truman Job was those Brothers Unlimited. See, it wasn't all about me. You know, when you step out, God send you people to help you. Because what helped me with those brothers, I opened a building up to them, and they sent me an associate, Bob Scott. I mean, this brother was bad. The bad that, you know, the D, like Jerome Horton said. He's black belt kung fu, been all over the world, about 22 years old. He took those Brothers Unlimited and started training them. He take them down in the ocean. And start giving them that type of exposure. And then he would teach them different dances and so forth under his training. And I saw 15 young gang banging. They controlled thousands of people in LA. Remember, in the LA, in that basin there. I saw them trained into young men. So I'm into them. I just want to share with you that that's a solution. And it's not as spiritual this young man would show up. Because I know about the beginning, and we help them. So I'm not going to say very much more. I have an office here. I can deal with that. Now I want to thank your coordinators too, the beautiful panel. Danny was there, the professor from Horn and a man from South Africa was beautiful. But what I like about him is everybody wants to tell their own, we all got stories. I can tell you some stories. But he kept saying, solution, solution. The solution is love and compassion in your community. Be concerned and have self-respect for people that look like you. I'm always talking. Why the Black Foundation? Because we are the lowest on the low, totem pole, and we focus on that. And when we bring our people up, all the other ethnic groups come up on anyway. So I focus on the Black Foundation. Thank you for keeping it on. Okay, come on, sweet, and let's end with this.
This is the reason why, you know, you have all the gang violence and all that kind of stuff, the labels they put on us. The way I'm dressed now is one of the labels they put on us. Okay, and who I am really don't make too much of a difference. You know what I'm saying? He told it all, basically. But what I'm trying to say is, when I walk these streets and deal with these youngsters, they didn't give up. I'm a father of 5 children right now. And they feel like when they try to do the right thing, nobody listens to them. So when youngsters are doing something positive, we need to really focus on that a whole lot. My uncle's a bishop. I was raised by my uncle's mother. And don't let this fool, life is an act, you know what I'm saying? I can take this off, put on something different. You think I was a totally different person. Okay, so we've been judged and prejudged And a lot of youngsters think the reason why they get beginning to stop is because they don't want the society, don't want us in the positions of authority. They don't want us being lawyers and doctors. Now, I was one of these lawyers and doctors and police officers. Until they started, I got first time I got beat up by a police officer in junior high school, handcuffed, after they handcuffed me. I was a little bigger then, but you know, but like I said, who saved me was a white cop. But he used to live away, that's what saved me. But what I'm trying to say is that the solution is a solution. The solution is for all the descendants of God, whether they're white or black or whoever they are. So all the churches need to get together, form a united front, and stand together and change some of these laws and lobby against some of these laws that's putting serious penalties against some of these crimes. You know what I'm saying? And we really need to change. The politicians coming to the church and talking where they go. And I want to thank you, Senator, for listening to us. Because it seems like I'm a man, so I can say this. It seems like all the women are taking leave. Which is okay for me. As long as we back them up. So, I want to thank you for starting this. But it's going to take the churches and work for everybody to stay in love, God, love with righteousness, to stand together. And change some of these laws that's affecting us. And if a child gets arrested for the first time offense, that needs for them to decide to try to save some of them. And we really do. I mean, that's what's going to take a united front and stop all the spiritual gangbanging. That's why I say stand together. And it's called spiritual gangbanging, what y'all doing. And then when y'all stand together for spiritual gangbanging, you're going to find youngsters to start to stop gangbanging.
All right, thank you very much. Well, I got the solution. And I'm going to land this plane in the spirit of saying, say this, because it's true.
Amen.
I spoke recently at a church for African American history. The Lord put me in my travels in the 2 years in front of Dorothy Height. I'm talking about strong African American women with intuition and wisdom. Dorothy Height, when they planned that Martin Luther King speech, she told me directly, this is straight from her mouth, she's 93 years old. And she said that when they got in that room in 1963, they had six, the Super Six. And the Super Six was James Farmer, Roy Wilkins, NAACP, Asa Philip Randolph, real powerhouse. He was president and founder of the Brotherhood Sleeping Car Board, the union. He put a lot of energy and money in that movement.
Dr. We got to move on. We got one more.
All right, okay. I'm going to get to the end. Thank you. Here's the end. And here's what I want to tell you, because I'm speaking at African Americans. We, the black men, need to recognize and understand our women and quit competing with them. Because she said that those men were, okay, Martin, you got 10 minutes. Asa, you got 10 minutes. Roy Wilkins, you got them all of them rightfully so at the time. You know what she said in her intuition? She said, "I was all that Martin say, and my God, they listened. That's why you have that beautiful speech. You would have never had it if it wasn't for the intuition of an African American woman." We as black men need to recognize the intuition and the strength of our women. Once we start doing that, our mothers, our sisters, our wives, then we will be on the road to be in the men that God has had us to be.
Thank you, Dr. Stein. We've all been a dead. Dr. Dorothy Height. I don't know what that
is. Oh, my goodness.
Our next group is the Economic Empowerment. Economic Empowerment. The reporter.
I was sitting there reflecting on how complicated yet how simple.
Who are you?
These issues are. Thank you, Najee. John Bryant, founder, chairman, and CEO of Operation Hope. Honored to be here today. I'm proud to say that we have operations in each of the congressional representative districts, a $2 million Hope Center in Juanita McDonald District, $2 million Hope Center, the first one in Watson's district, and they're thanking our teachers, program officers in Davis's district, and Becky and I have gone to a classroom and teach financial literacy just last year. The Bible suggests where there is no vision, the people perish. Let me frame very specifically the issues around our panel. Number one, Black Americans are the only race of people in the world today, over 220 countries, 6 billion people. We're the only race of people in the world today that created a political power base before we created an economic one.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Now, that means we are sending these brilliant minds to Washington, D.C., to tie one hand behind their backs and to fight for a decreasing pool of entitlements and subsidies versus an increasing pool of ownership, empowerment, and responsibility. America's not a democracy. It's not just a democracy. It's a democracy rooted in capitalism. So we talk about who gets the tax breaks. Again, we want to make sure we can have an emotional conversation but have a logical conversation. Who gets the tax break? The homeowner, like Mr. Sanders. The wage earner, the corporation that produces a profit. Those are the entities that get tax breaks and other incentives because those are the producers in the economy. So, again, just trying to frame the specifics of the issue so you understand where you're going, where you came from, you know where you're going and how to get there. The second issue is 40 acres and a mule, and somebody mentioned it earlier. That Black Americans after the Civil War were denied 40 acres and a mule, and the comment was tied to us liking each other. And the response was, what does like have to do with it? That if we had owned 40 acres and the mule, and had plotted the land and toiled the land and worked together as a family to build the land up, and then to plant a crop, and then to till that crop, and then to bring home the benefits of that crop, and then go to trade it on the market, and then bring home the riches of that, and then to build the network of the family, and we had to get up at Can't See in the morning and work to Can't See at night as a team to get that done, what does life have to do with it? But we missed that lesson. Tied to that. Some people would say that some Black people don't have a work ethic. Obviously not the folks here today, but some people would say that some Black people don't have a work ethic. It could be said that there's a logical argument to slaves during that era and the Jim Crow era for sitting on their hands. Because why would you work? You were a slave. You didn't own the product of your creation. You were a sharecropper. You didn't get the benefit of the object of that which you created. No matter how hard you worked, you could never become the owner. So there was a logical reason to defy and to sit on your hands. But after a generation or two of sitting on your hands on principle, one could argue that, and Jerry, don't go too far because I need you in a minute, one could argue that folks forgot why they were sitting on their hands and then just began to sit on their hands. Fast forward. We never got the pickup lesson on economics. In other words, we missed it with 40 acres and a mule, right? We were not an immigrant population that came here with people who looked like us that were running things, and so we had that vision where there's no vision that people perish. We never got the 40 acres and a mule, never got the work ethic that comes from that, and then fast forward, never got a pickup lesson on the value of ownership. So when we created a middle class, it was after World War II, and it was basically through, thank you, government jobs. That's where there was a level playing field. Teachers, librarians, the military, and because we didn't get a lesson in economics, all we had was a visual. So the visual was, to be middle class was to wear a nice suit, to drive a nice car. So we began to lease the Cadillac and rent the apartment building. Fast forward, Black folks today, middle class. The average middle class Black has an $8,000 net worth. The average middle class white, same income level, has an $88,000 net worth.
same income. The difference when you look at the facts, not the emotions, when you look at the facts, the difference is home ownership, stocks, and bonds. It wasn't making more money, it was making better decisions with the money you made. The self-esteem issue. There's a difference between being broke and being poor. To be broke is an economic condition. You've been there before, if you're struggling, you're gonna be there again. But to be poor is a disabling frame of mind and a depressed condition of your spirit, and you must vow never, ever, ever to be poor again. Or as Reverend Murray would say, it's not what people call you, it's what you answer to that's important, and never ever answer out of your name. If I don't like me, I can't like you. If I don't feel good about me, I jumped in the session, and while I was talking to somebody, I was sure was in the audience doing this, saying, well, who does he think he is, and what gives him a right to talk to me? But they never met me before. And what I said was, how is that a rational thought process? If I don't like me, I can't like you. If I don't feel good about me, I can't feel good about you. If I don't respect me, I can't respect you. And here's the biggest one. If I don't have a purpose in my life, I'm going to make your life a living hell. Of course, black folks' favorite issue came up over and over and over and over again. Racism. Basically two camps in our meeting around racism. There was a camp that said racism is the problem, and because of it, you cannot do anything about it or through it. I'm stuck. We talked about racism as if we heard about it on the 11 o'clock news last night. It is our favorite topic, and it is real. It is real. There was a second camp. It was odd that it seemed to be also a generational difference in perspective about this issue. There was another camp that basically said, racism is like rain. It's either falling someplace or it's gathering. So you might as well get out an umbrella and a color you like and start strolling through it, because it's not going to change, so you must. In other words, ain't nobody going to, I say ain't on purpose, ain't nobody going to save us but us. And so the logical extension of that was we could not be black for a living. Now you could be a good leader who happened to be black, but you couldn't be black for a living. And in 2005, nobody cares about your problems because everybody's got them. Of course, this was not a very pleasant conversation. This all fed into the core problem. And the core problem is, and here's really the rub. There's a new movement in this country that we created that we don't participate in today. I'll repeat. There is a new movement in this country that we created that we do not participate today. What's the movement? The Civil Rights Movement. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in 1968, the year he was assassinated, call for the Poor People's Campaign. For blacks, for Latinos, for Asians, for right. There are more poor whites in America than poor anybody else, by the way. Moving them all up the economic ladder, because he said, and I quote, you cannot legislate goodness, you cannot pass a law to force someone to respect you. The only way to social justice is through economic parity. That was Dr. King in 1968. I would go so far as to say, you cannot pass a law to protect me from myself. You can pass a law against predatory lenders, but if I'm financially illiterate, it's what I don't know that I don't know that's killing me. And so I'm not asking what the interest rate is, I'm asking what the payment is. And it's a different question. So you can't, no matter how brilliant you are, you can't protect me from myself. He was assassinated 3 weeks before his march on Washington of the Poor People's Campaign, and the movement died. We've had our wilderness period. 40 years.
That's right. That's right.
You with me?
Say that.
Ambassador Andrew Young sat down with me and had a 7-hour lunch and said this. We integrated the lunch counter, we integrated the public building, we integrated the schoolhouse, but we never integrated the dollar.
That's right.
That's right.
And he continued, capitalism in a capitalist society with no true access to capital is nothing more than a sophisticated form of slavery.
It is, right.
And so he suggested, as we will do on April 12th in Atlanta with a day of hope with Andrew Young, that we need to move from civil rights to silver rights and have a dawning of a new movement in America. It's not to the exclusion of civil rights. It is building on civil rights to execute on silver rights. Wow. And finally, if the 20th century is about racing the color line all over the world or civil rights, and the first civil right was the right to vote, and the public officials like you gave us the legal right to vote, then the 21st century is going to be on issues of class and poverty. And the first silver right of the 21st century will be financial literacy. If you don't know better, you cannot do better. Now, the role models in the room, Gary Edwards of the Flying Fox, Dwayne Faust of ESNA Corporation Mortgage, Essen, I believe it's called. Sean Floyd said, you need to get in where you can fit in. I believe Sean's right here. The message was, on group economics, that there is no we, there's only you. And where we ended up here, and I'd like for Jerry maybe to put the final touch on this, where we ended up was basically your message, Mr. Sanders. You mentioned you were a homeowner, and that is more important to you who your councilman is than who the President of the United States is. And we talked about this issue of racism and all these issues, and so the issue was, you know, Harlem gone. You get that later. Harlem is gone. There are million-dollar townhomes selling on 125th Street in Harlem today. Racism didn't take it from us. We gave it away. Detroit is on a bubble. Pittsburgh is gone. They're building $250 million townhomes. South Central LA is centrally located real estate. 15 minutes from the port, the freeway, downtown, and the beach. It's not a black community. It's not a Latino community. It's a green community. And so the question was, how do we act on all of this? It costs just as much to rent as it does to own.
Right.
Jerry? So the issue was, in 1992 when the riots happened, 35% of us renting own a home, and 65% of us rented for the same cost of a mortgage payment. But there was not one structure damaged in the riots in 1992 that was a home. 3,000 structures damaged, not one was a home. So when you create a homeowner, you create a taxpayer. When you create a homeowner, you create enlightened self-interest. When you create a homeowner, you create a voter, because the voter turnout rate in 92 was 38%, and the homeownership rate was 35%. So how do you help them? Become more homeowners. When you create a homeowner, you create a policeman on that block, you become a venture capitalist with equity in your home to send your kids to college or start a business. In other words, you have options in your life, and when you have options in your life, can't nobody hurt you but you. Thank you. Wow.
I want to join the rest of the people with the Congress people who really represent our district. We had a very good meeting, and I think that one of the things that I wanted to, I was in the Congresswoman's office yesterday, and she said, Jerry, you ought to come to this. And they just kind of threw me in the middle of it, and I just tell you, it's been terrific. You know, it's one of the things that hit me about the whole thing, and I was listening to Kurt Weston today, and he said, first of all, we're different. And it's nothing wrong with being different, because we've been told all the time that we're different. The thing that I also have learned since I've been in business over 40 years in the city of Los Angeles is that you don't be afraid to be different. You accept the difference and make it a positive. And it's a different thing. And you got to work at whatever is necessary to do. But what I found also, that when we talk about entrepreneurship, is that it gives you the great freedom to be a part of all kinds of things that happen in the community. One of the things that I have had the freedom of doing, because I own the business, I had to fight for the chief of police having to keep his job. I had the freedom to go and argue about the fact that things were wrong.
That's right.
I had the freedom to say to the people that they were doing all the things wrong. I didn't have to ask my boss if it was all right for me to be off. And so one of the things that I think is most important is that you do have the opportunity to think about having your own business, no matter what you like. I told them earlier that I was a disciple and didn't know I would until afterwards that the Fountainhead is a story about a man who decided what he wanted to do in his lifetime and what he did according to what he thought was best for him. He didn't follow anyone else's path. He did what he thought was best for him. He had the basic background of it, and then on the basis of that, he did that kind of thing. I think the overall of this thing should be, the conference should be, for the young people that we talk to, tell them, whatever you think you like to do, you ought to go out and make that a business with you. It's been my pleasure to be here, and thank you very much.
To me, like the business group was telling us that mama may have, papa may have, but God bless
the child.
God is all. There's nothing like everything else. Faith, family, and parenting. Can't get any more interesting than that. Faith, family, and parenting. Is the reporter for that group here?
He's on his way up.
Oh, okay, he's on his way.
What, how many minutes, Mr. Davis? 3 minutes? 5 minutes?
5 minutes? That works.
Mine will be short. Worth some time. Real quick, I just wanted to say I was looking at your emblem with the trees and the people under it. You know, there's a proverb that talks about one generation plants the seed for the other generation. And I was just thinking about, we are living under the shade tree of our ancestors that were planted. Spiritually, we derive the shade from your parents, your grandparents, your ethical standards, your perceptions, and your right and wrong, and their sense of moral duty, and above all, the spiritual commitment. And I think the challenge for us in this group, and that's, like I said, looking at that emblem, are we going to plant some trees that will shade the future generations from the heat of this anti-Christian value in an anti-Christian world? I think it's very important for us to remember that. We had 4 questions, and probably like many of you, we only got to 3 of them. Very energetic group. I'm sorry, I didn't say what it was. My name is Ken Bell, and I'm the facilitator. The first one was the role of the church in empowering the African-American male. And I'm just going to just like they hit them, they gave it to us. And the identity, identify the abilities of the African-American men, define what a man is, define programs with steps for all denominations and systematic systems and practical application, provide educational and employment opportunities, teach men how to be fathers and priests in their own homes, get a positive agenda, and lead moral campaigns. The church must extend into the community, and we have to teach how to love oneself. The second question was, what is the role or the responsibility of the African-American male in regards to God and his family? And our committee came up with, the church can help men to fulfill their family roles. Men have to show self-respect and be role models. And the system is, the man is under God's umbrella, and the other parts of his family will be under his umbrella. Men must protect and provide and be godlike for those who submit to them. And then to teach men to deal with their emotions. And wives can save unbelieving husbands, create a unified message, and the man was to love their wife unselfishly, campaign with systematic steps, and the man to be a communicator from God to
his family. And then the third question was, what are the parenting needs for the healthy development of African-American males? And the points that the committee came up with, must love oneself to teach the family. You must have emotional support from the fathers. You need community support. And you have to be a role model. The fathers have to relate and communicate with their children and remember how it was when they were a child and bring some of those experiences to your children. And I just wanted to end by, we've had a lot of things, sometimes it almost seems like it's a lot of negative stuff, and this is something I just wanted to share. It's dedicated to black fathers. You black fathers who have tried to provide and protect, stay strong. Do black fathers who continue to encourage and empower their children, continue. Do black fathers who black mothers, who love black mothers, thank you. Do black fathers who preach, practice what they preach, set the example. Do black fathers who reach out and reach back, continue to uplift. Do black fathers who are honest and honorable, remember Martin Luther King. To black fathers who are determined and disciplined, remember Malcolm. To black fathers who have not given up, remember Mandela. To black fathers who are courageous and demanding, remember Douglas. To black fathers who are systematic and work hard, remember Du Bois. Black fathers who are self-determining, remember Booker T. For black fathers who have decided to win, who have decided to fight back, who don't make excuses, who promote and practice the essence of black fatherhood, manhood, and brotherhood, let's continue to celebrate the power of our endurance. Let's continue to choose the right path, and let's remain strong to keep the faith. Thank you very much.
Believe that the church is at the core of turning the situation around. You know, I was listening to a blues singer the other day defining manhood, and he said that everybody's running around talking about you as a man. Act like a woman don't want nothing but men. He said that a woman wants you to love her and love her with joy. That she don't want no man acting like a managed boy. I think the church has a great opportunity to help teach that message in terms of manhood and what it really means. And also in terms of personhood and in terms of hope and looking for tomorrow. See, if you can't look forward to tomorrow, ain't much point in doing nothing today. I mean, if you can't look forward to tomorrow, doesn't make sense to do a lot of stuff today. My daddy used to tell us to live as though we were to die tomorrow, but prepare as though we were to live 1,000 years. I thought he was being conscientious. But he was being an educator. Education and health. Well, it says education, health. But it's really education and then health. And so education is our next group. The reporter for the education group. Coming along the aisle.
Good afternoon. Professor Ra had to leave, but he first opened up the workshop with a challenge in three areas. He asked three questions of the panel and opened the door for discussion. Question number one, does the public school system, or is the public school system designed to develop employees or employers among the African Americans? Number two, Is it important to educate African American about their history and culture during their primary stage of education? Number three, why are African American males underrepresented in higher education? And he summed it up with a subject saying that education is yet a primary struggle. Some of the areas we looked at as far as solutions, one, the community, and one, legislator. In the area of community, we said start a movement to educate homes, churches, families, communities, and have education as a high priority and commitment. We talk about what the problems are. One of the panelists brought out the point that we need committed people to come and volunteer their number one time to help educate our African American males. We can talk about them all day long, but we have programs that do work, but they don't have enough people volunteering to put them on. And number two, issue of the California high school exit exam, which falls under the area of legislation. And what they were recommending was that they make it mandatory that the schools start preparing them as early as kindergarten. Also, legislative-wise, make it mandatory that we have parental legislation. We need parental involvement in the school. Parents don't go in and out like they used to. It's a shame, but it may end up with a law saying you will go to your school one day a week and volunteer your time with your child. Also, it was suggested that we protect the upper bound programs. We have some good programs for our young people, but they're being cut out. The legislature needs to uphold them. And last, they said that we need to promote unsung heroes that impact the lives of our young people. There's a lot of people that impacted our young people. We need to honor them. We need to honor them and give their legacy and what they have done for our young people. And a gentleman gave me one more, said we need to encourage educators to promote students with values, principles, and manners that won our freedom and will maintain them from the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. We really need to make sure that our students are learning what the laws of the land are all about and how it affects them. Thank you.
All right. Bravo.
That's the way educators operate. And I think our last, but perhaps most important, is health. The reason I say most important is because you can have all the rest of the problems in the world. You can be unemployed, but if you're sick, you don't feel like going out looking for a job.
That's right.
You can be illiterate.
That's right.
They can't read, write. But if you're sick, you don't feel like trying to learn how to read, write.
That's right.
You can live in rat and roach infested houses. But if you're sick, you don't feel like trying to get out. And so nothing is more important than health, our last subject area.
Thank you, sir. And I want to thank the panel today. This has been great. But what I want to say is on the issue of health, Kendrew, we need to save it, period. We need to put ourselves in position economically and flat say that hospital, university, and pharmacy. And then tell us, let them tell us, well, no, we're going to do something else with the money. But we need to raise $1 billion for Kendrew, and we can do it if we put our mind together. And not only that, we can use that as a prototype to raise $1 billion for any other market we want to go into and have our say-so. And we can do that within a matter of days, 30 days. We can do it. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Herman Govan, and I was asked to serve as the scribe in the health section. And I took a lot of notes, but I'm going to cut it short. We're winding down the conference. And follow on what Mr. Davis said. Without health, you really have nothing. And we had three components. There were three panels. Bill Wilson, Mertis Tracy, and Dr. Brian Nichols. And what they took on were nutrition, mental health, and HIV AIDS. All of this within the framework of the African American male. In terms of nutrition, I think the key point that was made is that our choices in nutrition affect our health. That is, what we choose to eat is going to define how healthy we are. And one of the points that was made is that, for example, if you go into a supermarket, a general supermarket in our neighborhoods, you have to walk to the back of the store to reach the vegetable section, to reach the fruit section. In the front of the store, with its scent exiting the door, we have the fried chicken section. So we're compelled to go in, drawn in by these scents, when we can just walk past that. It's our choice. We have to walk past that. We don't even have to cook these foods that we have to get in the back of the store, the vegetables and the fruit. And we should demand that we are receiving quality fruit and vegetables in our stores. That's part of what we need for our health. Second point that I want to make in terms of mental health was, I never thought of it quite this way, but Dr. Nichols pointed out that in terms of the manly thing to do, that's one of the things that the African American male seems to neglect. Okay? We have to take care of ourselves. We have to be emotionally sound in order for us to function well in the community. And I think that was an excellent point that he made. The last point was, the last component was HIV/AIDS. And many of you have heard from Wilson. He was on C-SPAN a couple of weeks ago in one of the big conferences that was broadcast. And he had four bulleted points that I just want to mention. That we need to get informed, we need to know our own status, we need to get treated, and we need to get involved. This virus is very aptly named. It affects humans. It causes an immunodeficiency in humans, right? It's not also important exactly the source of this virus. We have to put this fire out now before it destroys our community. And it is running through our communities, and we know that it is destroying populations in Africa. It's going to make Somalia and Rwanda look minor. It is killing us. It kills humans.
That's right.
And we need to take care of it.
Right.
I think since it was so much said before me, I'm going to stop right there.
Good job.
Here today. Have you enjoyed it?
Yes.
Have you enjoyed this day?
Yes.
This day has been dedicated to the African American male. Will all African American males stand up at this point? All men stand up. I'm sure if you're an African American male or not. It's up to me, those of you who are not, have been sensitive to the issues of your people just as well. All men stand up. Ladies, with every fiber in your hands, let's give them an arousing, we love you! We need you! We look to you
to guide us through!
Men, thank you so much for being here today. And for those who have come and gone, we will say the same about them. Thank you. You may be seated. I just want to acknowledge a couple more folks before I give my few remarks, and then I'm going to ask Big Money, one of my constituents, to come up and give brief remarks. I'm going to cut mine so that you can be brief so that we can move on. People have to take planes out today. We have some school board members here. Miss Sandra Davis out of the Inglewood School Board. She may have come and gone because she was. Oh, thank you so much, Sandra, for being here.
Culver City.
So
Oklahoma City School Board.
Well, they say, well, I'm sorry about that, Sandra, but you're doing great work for education in Culver City. Ms. Marguerite Lamont, who was here from Los Angeles Unified, and she's here. I tell you, look at these educators. They're still in the house. They are still in the house, board members. Sandra Davis out of Culver City, Marguerite Lamont out of Los Angeles Unified. Thank you so very much. Now you can have one half second. Quinlan and Larry Brown, can you stand? And Marguerite, weren't you principal at that time? All right, tell it like it is. Tell it like it is. That's why they succeeded. We also have Dr. Robert Barner, who is the assistant superintendent of LA County Board of Education. I think I saw Robert go out just a few minutes ago. Today, what we are doing and what we have done is to call for this challenge. This is a challenge to take control of our lives, whether we are black males or females. But today we're talking about black males. We will and we can face the challenges that have been brought to us today. I know that you can. I have a lot of confidence in you. So what I'm asking you to do today, all of the facilitators who came forward today, we are going to, Diane, I'm already putting you on the hot seat, but that's the way it goes. Diane, Jan Perry, Councilwoman, all of the Assembly members, we will call you and we will meet with you. And then what we're going to do is take those notes that you gave to us, and we will then develop a strategy, some strategic plans, how we take that to, yes, superintendent of schools for education. If we have to go to the governor, we will go to the governor. We got to go to the penal systems, whoever the top gun, who our secretary of our corrections or whoever was here last night, we will take it to him. We are going to march on anything we need to march on in order to get the results that will come out of this seminar today, this symposium, conference, call it whatever you may. We are on the march now. These men have come ready to work. Those who are here and those who have left, they left with a good spirit. I heard nothing but just good spirits that came out of that workshop, these workshops. And so I am saying to you, the challenge is upon us. We will not let this be just a feel-good day. This is going to be a feel-good year. This is going to be a feel-good decade. This is going to be a feel-good century. We are going to make sure we got to be on the march of hope. We're going to end all of these types of statistics by 32% of African-American males employed. We are going to address that. Why there are nearly 40% of African-American males on probation, parole, and in prison, we will be addressing that. Why do so many African-American males die earlier than their counterparts of diseases and other treatable and curable disease? We will absolutely address that, even if we have to go to the White House, Danny, and talk to the man there. We are not going to stop here today. So I promise you, and we promise you, my co-hosts, these vanguards sitting up here, we will not let this day be a day just of remembrance, a good time, and a good lunch bump. We are going to make sure that hope will continue to permeate what our dear friend Danny Davis has created and started.
That's right.
We have with us, I think we still have, I see my brother back there, the Consul General of Ethiopia. Stand up, my friend, Tai Selassie. We have pulled them out from all corners of this city. This will not be the city, just the city of the angels. We got to make progress because God is on our side. And now, big money comes to the mic, and I'm going going to give you 2 seconds, big money.
I can do it in 2 seconds, but I definitely want to thank you, Congresswoman Diane Watson and Juanita McDonald. Okay, but I wanted to use this here. We have this here too, Don. And this is one of the things, you know, I believe in maps, you know, and when we talk about the economic empowerment, when we talk about solutions, that's what I'm about. So I'm talking about a national black economic savings plan. And how that would work would be that if we could divide the United States in half this way and this way, we'd have 1, 2, 3, 4 regions. And of those 4 regions, we would ask for 10 million brothers and sisters to come together with $10 a month. For 1 year is $120 that's refundable upon your request. In addition to that, we want to say that as a National Black Economic Savings Plan member, it is you who select the person that will be getting the money to put it in a National Black Bank that Charles 1-800-UNITE-US has the records of, as well as any other banking system that will help us help each other help ourselves. So that's one of the things that we're offering you. There's an old saying in California, so goes California, so goes the nation. And so with no further ado, I want you to know that that is a National Black Economic Savings Plan. One other thing I want to say, Congresswoman, is that I've been given the right as a result of the voters recorder's office and the right to come up with a national, with an economic ethnic lotto. A lotto that guarantees one person from every ethnic race that lives in the largest county in the United States to become instant thousandaires or instant millionaires. How would that work? No matter what ethnicity you are, whether you're white, black, Latino, Chinese, Japanese, Korean, Asian, multiracial like a Tiger Woods, just color in ethnic race. Color in your ethnicity. And if you don't win, at least someone of your ethnic race will win twice a week for the rest of our lives, as long as we reside in high-populated, multiracial environments, whether it's Los Angeles, New York, Florida, anywhere there is a high population of various ethnic races. So there's another way in which we can strategize to get our people to realize that in spite of all adversity, success can still be obtained. Thank you.
All right, that is.
I don't know if much more to be said, but I too am going to take a second to just run through the key points. In the mass media and entertainment group, they talked about controlling your image, define yourself, direct your action, communicate, network, and be sure you can be held accountable. Civic and political participation. Black men are individualists, that's acceptable. Politicians, in many cases, are felt to be out of touch. And what indeed is civil rights in the 20s or the 2000s? We must stay engaged, we must get involved, we need to be empowered, and political leadership needs to be in the church as well. Public policy committees in the church are a must for our black males. The criminal justice system. Access your spirit more. Go into the prisons and do your work there and learn your history.
Reach down to me.
History has missed us in many cases. We do not learn in our educational institutions, so we must pass the word down ourselves that we are descendants of kings and queens, princes and princesses, presidents, governors, land owners, the designers of pyramids. We must negotiate for job creation. The solutions are love and compassion. We must focus on the positive, and all those who love God must stay together. Economic empowerment. Financial literacy is a must. Making better decisions with the money you make. If you don't have a purpose, your life
will be a living hell. No one is going to save you or save us but us. You cannot sell black for a living. And I would say, don't be a victim. The civil rights are not our rights. The man with the silver has the right. So you need to have your civil rights protected so you too can own your civil rights. Create homeowners, because as a taxpayer, that money can come back to provide the services you need for your family. Accept the difference, but make that difference positive. And if money says that we need to have an ethnic lottery, faith, family, and parenting teach us how to respect each other, teach us how to be fathers, and teach one how to love oneself. Show self-respect and you'll show it to others. Men must protect and provide, and men must communicate for God. They must seek community support, and we must support our men. They must be role models. And fathers, you have to stay strong, and you have to be truthful and honorable and make a decision to win. In terms of education, you have to make it your first priority. You need people to come in and volunteer to support that notion. And parents must be involved with their students' education and must be in the schools. And we must uphold the good and effective programs, and we must honor the unsung heroes. In terms of our health, if you don't have your health, then you have death.
That's right.
So in order to stay healthy, you must first look at your nutrition, and you must bypass all the snacks that confront you when you walk into the market and those fried foods that you smell in the market, and go to the back where your backup is, and that's the fresh fruit and vegetables. You've got to make the correct nutritional choices. Just know that what you have said here has been noticed, and what you have said here will be documented, and what you have said here will be on video. And so I want to thank at this point Willie Mitchell and his crew. Willie, where are you? Stand up. Give him a big hand. He documents everything we do in our community. And he has a group of students who are with him. And they are learning the professions to go into careers behind the cameras and many in front of them. He has his young reporters with him often. So Willie, thank you. And I also want to thank our staff. Will the staff from Juanita Millender McDonald come up in the front? Will the staff of Diane Watson's office come up to the front? Will the staff from Danny Davis's office come up to the front? Those thousands of letters that we receive, the hundreds of emails, the hundreds of faxes, and the personal visits, these are the people who receive them, okay? These are the people who make us look good.
Here, here.
So these are the people that you communicate, because we're all in Washington.
Yep.
So you have to communicate with them.
That's right.
Now, we don't always send you a notice or a letter. Just know it was not an intentional mistake. Often people move and their addresses don't get on our mailing list. And so don't call up and bawl them out. Call up and say, oh, it's a beautiful day, and I want to be part of what you do. And so here's my address, my phone number, my cell number, and be sure I get on that mailing list. That's the approach, and they'll put you right on. You know? If you call up with a different attitude, well, my staff knows they don't give attitude back. But your name might not get on that list. So I tell you how to do it. So, yes, so we're going to starting right here, and we're going to go down the line. Jim, please.
James Cooper from Congresswoman Diane Watson's office.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Herb Evans, Congresswoman Diane Watson's office.
Andrew Hudson, Congresswoman Juanita McDonald. Ken Bell, Congresswoman Diane Watson's office.
Richard Boykin, the voice of God, Congressman Danny.
I love that. Okay. He's a minister as well.
Ian Patton, Congresswoman Juanita Millender McDonald.
Lois Hill Hale, Press Secretary to Congresswoman Diane Watson.
This is Lonnie Sanders with Congresswoman Diane Watson.
Paulette Starks with Congresswoman Diane E. Watson.
And District Director.
And I'm Nikki Randolph, and I'm a volunteer to do anything she wants because she has power. Okay.
I'm with the Congresswoman Diane Watson. I'm the photographer. My name is Chris Ray.
Stan?
Hi, Stan Henderson with Congresswoman Diane Watson. I also work here at the University of Southern California.
Yeah.
Hi, Josephine Aguilar Martin. I'm with Congresswoman Juanita Melinda McDonald.
Can't hear you.
Loud. Who's your outside voice?
My outside voice.
We're recording, so please welcome.
My name is Josephine Aguilar Martin, and I'm with Congresswoman Juanita Melinda McDonald.
I'm Mary Angus, Deputy for Congresswoman Melinda McDonald from the 37th Congressional District.
I'm Mary Gaddis from Congresswoman Juanita Melinda McDonald's office.
I'm Moni Singh with the Congresswoman Juanita Melinda McDonald's office.
I'm Mary Edwards with the great Congresswoman Juanita Melinda McDonald's office.
That's a good phrase.
I'm Kerry Stinson with Congresswoman Melinda McDonald.
I'm Dr. Kevin Williams, representing the National SAM Board, volunteer following the voice of God, Representative Danny Davis.
And I'm Emmett Cash, I'm with Diane Watson, I'm in the campaign office.
Charles Stewart, District Representative for Congresswoman Diane Watson.
Please, audience, give these people a huge applause. Juanita and I, come up, Juanita. We want to thank our staff for making this all possible. Now count the number of people up in front. Come up. That's a lot of folks.